And now, courtesy of the 11L Network, it's LF Midwood.
LF Midwood.
And the Midwood Files. With the LF Midwood Experience. Here on Radio New York International.
We don't have cough buttons, just so you know.
Oh, yeah.
Welcome to the Midwood Files. I heard that. That's what I'm telling you. And these things, you know, when you put these, welcome to the Midwood Files. My name is LF Midwood. I have my guest tonight is the producer. Junior's here live with us. We were supposed to have a different guest, but apparently they fell asleep, which is, you know, cool, I guess. You know, this is a problem when you start deciding that you're going to have guests of a certain age. You know, they just. It's the way it is, you know. You know, they didn't get a chance to take a nap during the day, or you know, whatever.
Neither
did
whatever I. Maybe,
yeah. But you know, they got high. I was going to do the show, but I got high. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
That I think that pertains to any age group. But I was going to tell you, I can hear that. I heard the cough.
I'm sorry.
Because I always open the mics while the bed is still playing. It's because it's a little bed. John wants me to talk over that bed. I refuse.
Well, so you could tell a person this stuff.
Well, there's no cough button. And what I do is I just open it so there's no sudden, oh, when it goes. Do you know what I'm saying? I'm not just going to pop the mics live after the, especially with the AC. I'm not going to pop it. It's going to be blended.
Well, now you tell me.
Yeah, well, okay. It's not nothing that I'm going to be, let's be honest. You lost your XLR cable.
Okay.
You literally, the cable that came out of her 286 on the desk, she lost it. She's talking into the microphone and she's wondering why the microphone isn't working. And I'm like, there's no XRL cable into the microphone.
This is the real reason we're not doing video
anymore. Yeah,
this is
why we're not doing video anymore. Yeah. Yeah. The video thing, like I said, you know, I get all geared up to do video in my head. I want to go back and do it because, you know, all the big ones are doing it. All the luminaries are doing it, you know. And then I think about the work involved, and I think about the lighting, and I think about, you know, I am in the process of getting a new camera, so anything's possible, I suppose.
Oh my God.
But I can't get away from the idea of really what I want to do is I just want to put some pre-recorded stuff up on YouTube, and possibly BitChute. Just to, you know what I mean? Just
is that kinda, still around, BitChute?
Yeah, BitChute is definitely still around. As a matter of fact, a lot of people who have been deplatformed from YouTube, which is a growing number.
Hey, growing number.
I was listening to the political cesspool tonight, and they had Hendrik and his wife. He had Hendrik for 1 hour and his wife, Lana, for the second hour from Red Ice. And I used to listen to Red Ice all the time
on
YouTube, but they got deplatformed. So I'd have to go over to their site, and I don't really do that too much. And it's the same thing with the Molyneux. I don't find myself going over to Freedom Radio, and I should because it's not that difficult
Wait,
to do.
He got deplatformed?
Yes, the Molyneux got deplatformed like a couple of months ago. Yeah.
Bunch of commies. Oh my God.
Yeah, that's right. We're deplatforming the philosophers.
Is that
now,
the same thing as canceling?
Well, for platform purposes, it is. Yeah. Yeah. And I lost another 15 to 20 on Twitter this week. And I lose two, I gain two, I lose three. I mean, it's like that for me on Twitter. I don't have a huge Twitter account. I think I'm following like 1,100 people and I got like 900 and something followers. I've been known to peak as much as like 1,050 as far as followers go. But you know how, you know, anybody who's in YouTube or I should say Twitter for the long term knows the ebb and flow. But when you turn your, when you go to your account and, you know, you go see what's going on, and all of a sudden there are you're down 30, you're down 40, you're down 50. And I think I mentioned it last week.
Yeah.
You know something's going on. So Jack's playing games over there. Not for nothing. So,
well, pretty soon he's not going to have anybody left to play with.
Well, you know what it is? A lot of people are moving to Parlay. You know, and Parlay's all right. They don't have a dark mode, which is really disturbing.
Well, fuck them then.
That's kind of, if they had a dark mode, they would go up like 2-3 points automatically.
They're
in my
not
book.
Cool.
But they're just, they don't have enough bite for me. You know, I think the, you know, the sissies and the, you know, the backseat drivers and the Grammys, you know, as in the grandmas, let them go over to Parlay. You know what I mean? And I post my show link to Parlay. I put up a couple of posts a month. You know,
that's a
week.
Really gay word,
but,
anyway.
But if you want to, if you want some bite, if you really want some real, a real good full mouth of hatred, like a rare steak, and the juice drips down your chin and you just go primal, go over to Gab. I recommend Gab. I'm a Gab person. You know, that being said, I'm glad that there are other platforms. I'm glad that there is something like, you know, Parlay for people to go
idea,
to other than
I don't
just send a message to Twitter.
Really, I don't want sissies anywhere near me. Actually,
well, you
so
know,
far.
People say it would be, you know, if President Trump posted over on Parlay, even one or two posts, it would immediately go into the stratosphere, you know, and it would get in. Because that's the problem. You know, none of these platforms have the strength, you know, of Twitter, because they don't have the commercial,
right?
You know, they don't have the revenue from there, right? You know,
that's absolutely true. So, every marketing expert says that's
Twitter's
after,
pretty powerful.
Oh yeah, after Instagram, that's number two. Facebook isn't even the go-to marketing platform anymore. So yeah.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook because I have family and friends on Facebook. That's I don't that, you know what I mean. I don't even bombard Facebook as much as I used to. A couple posts a week, maybe now I'm down to. And it's a place to stay in touch with people and, you know, to feel a sense of community with the people who, well, I want in my community, I suppose.
I guess.
But it's Twitter, where, you know, either Twitter or Gab or Parlay, like even Minds, I believe I use as well too. Not for nothing.
Minds, M-I-N-E-S.
Minds, yeah. They've been around for a while. So yeah, there are other platforms. They don't have a dark mode either. I'm big on this dark mode thing, man.
Well,
you know, like when Gab got a dark mode, I was like, yes.
Yeah.
And I think Facebook has a dark mode, but it's only on PC.
It is, yeah, and it's only on, because I have a couple of accounts because I'm a big, you know.
Because you're just that large.
Yes, I am. Just, you know, that important.
Yeah.
And only one of them can be dark. I can't be
close to the mic.
Both. Yeah,
it's not going to bite you.
But it's making that thing. I'm doing.
No.
Anyway.
Hit it straight on. Christ sakes.
I can only have dark mode on one, okay?
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Well, yeah.
Is it like a beta thing that I don't, you know,
it's
what I mean?
It's a beta thing, which lasts for like 10 years, right?
Well, they need to get it on, they need to get it on Android. You know,
yeah,
Messenger has it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been dark mode and Messenger on Android, you know, because people, like, they yell at me because, like, oh, they go, you know, go to Facebook and you see this and you see that. And I'm like, no, I don't see it. I'm on they're on Windows and I'm on Android, and they don't get, it's like, oh, they think it's like all this. No, it's not. It's not. It's a different interpretation. It's like, it's to the point of where we would need CP3O. It's that kind of deal. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know. That being said, I always love to get the Star Wars references in there. That being said, yeah, it's tough. But I would love for Facebook to, you know, and even not for nothing, even when Messenger went, they got the dark mode, they didn't tell anybody about it. They buried it in the settings.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, like, for a YouTube while. Yeah, they buried it in settings for a while, which was, you know, it's like, come on. I'm very much in the dark mode. As a matter of fact, my whole friggin' life is pretty much in dark mode.
Right.
Yeah, as much as can be. As
what
much
do you
as
say
actually can
when you
be.
Come in here into the studio? And we have only like one light on, which is usually the case.
Yeah,
and then just the board and the processors.
Yeah,
all the little blinky lights on. All that's missing is the Star Trek bridge ambiance.
Yeah,
which I happen to have a recording
well,
of.
Well, I remember, you know, being in JL's studio and JPL's studio, you know, back in like 87.
Yeah,
and he would just have one like backlight behind him so he could have enough light to do what he was doing, and it was the equipment lit up, and there was like maybe one lamp all the way over the end of the room, and there's like a haze of marijuana smoke. And then occasionally he would have to turn the big lamp on, a big bright light behind him, and everybody would be like, ah! We would be shrieking
like vampires in the sun.
We would be shrieking. It was horrible. Yeah, it was horrible. like Dracula, like the Dracula kitty coming out into the sun, you know. I did get some compliments on last week's show, and I'm kind of glad, you know, because I did the show, right? And I say to myself, you know, I'm walking out, I'm shutting down the equipment, and, you know, I go to the junior, and I'm like, was that a good show? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, it wasn't out of character for me, was it? And she's like, no, you know, it was. Somehow, Hemingway's cats wound up hijacking the program. I obviously had a pallet of news ready to go.
You did, yeah.
I did. And I should have saved Hemingway's cats, but it just, you know what it is, we're doing these hour shows, and I'm going to do an hour again tonight. If you don't hear music, I'm doing an hour. That's pretty much what it comes down to. If I'm doing music, I'll push it to 90. And I haven't felt super inclined to do music. I did, I put my headphones on, I plugged into my phone, I went to my music streaming service, and I poked around. I listened to some of the stuff. I have to have warm-up stuff, you know, stuff that I, like my favorites and stuff that I listen to that I'm really, really, familiar, you know, and I think everybody does that.
Sure.
And then I start working into the, like, the playlist, and because I add stuff to a playlist all the time. I got this one On Deck folder that I just throw stuff in there, and whenever I hear something or somebody says something to me, or, you know, I use the phone to identify what it is and then have it pull it up, which is a great feature. I mean, that is awesome.
I've gotten used to that. Yeah. He does that not just when he's by himself, I might add.
Nope.
But when in our alone time, when we're watching movies or whatever, it's always, oh, I got to get that song every 10 minutes. Which is pretty cool because we've actually expanded our musical library a gazillion fold because of it. That's where he gets all those cool covers.
Well, yeah, a lot of cool covers. You know, I and some stuff's better than other things. You know, your average movie, you never know. I started watching The Umbrella Academy, and I hadn't watched it last. I think it's in the second season on Netflix. I hadn't watched it last year, so I watched the first season, and I think I'm ready to go into the second season. It's a lot of good music in there. A lot, and you know, I can. Yeah. I have this thing where, like, either a production paid for the music, as I put it, where they got the good stuff and they got the rights to it, or they didn't pay for the music. Umbrella Academy paid for the music, so you know what I mean. It's you know, just like the best TV show for paying for the music was Supernatural.
Yeah, they did.
I mean, there's not a song that they use. When they use a song, it's a big song. It was a big hit somewhere. And they paid for the rights to be able to use it. You know, that was one of the big things about, you know, I always get reminded of why, what was it? Was it Dark Skies? What was the UFO show in the 90s? I think it was Dark Skies, wasn't it?
Yeah, Dark Skies that used covers.
Right, but it used a lot of covers, but it used, Sony bought it, right?
Yeah.
And they talked about the idea of streaming it again.
Yeah.
But they would have to pay for the music again.
Right.
And it would be a small fortune.
Right.
Because the show used a lot of A-hit music.
Sure.
So, you know, that's one. If you're ever wondering why, you know, one of the reasons that never made a comeback, because it was an interesting show.
Yeah.
I think it left off on a cliffhanger, if I recall correctly, but it was still worth putting the time in.
Yes, it did.
It was kind of like a baby X-Files. I kind of viewed it that way.
Music licensing is ridiculously expensive.
And the internet changed everything.
Sure, yeah.
You know, it's a whole other level.
Right.
So, you know, you could have the rights for you know, and to run it on television, but when it comes to and reruns, but when it comes to the internet was treated as a totally different animal, and I guess it still is to a certain degree.
Well, it is, and I don't think people realize that there are a lot of different hands that go into the pot, the royalty pot of any given song, especially if it's a hit.
Yeah,
you have, you know, the writers, the lyricist, the performer, every musician that had anything to do with it, practically, and you know, so there are agencies that you can send your request to that will get permission for you to use that from like ASCAP and
I
BMI
think
so it's expensive.
I think Live 365 reinvented it as that type of service.
Yeah.
Where you can stream I forget what the total number of, there's a whole formula is involved with this stuff, but you have to track what you play. Mm-hmm. And you pay a certain amount, and they'll pay ASCAP and what's those P's again?
Yeah.
ASCAP and the Canadian, whatever the Canadian, I think they do Canadian one as well, possibly the English as well for European play. It's quite expensive, but if you wish to go that route, I mean, it's possible. With the amount of music I play around here, it's just not worth it. Otherwise, I'd consider it. And I like flying the black, not for nothing. But I do know stories of people who have tried to pay some of these, you know, some like ASCAP, some of these agencies, these three-letter music representation agencies, and they don't even pick up the phone.
No, they don't. They don't. Well, that's the funny part.
I mean, it's crazy. So
I've heard stories about, you know, like from my dad and stuff, like where an artist is going to record something, and whether they're a well-known artist or not, you get all the material together that you're going to cover that isn't yours. You send in the applications for permission to use for the license, and it takes sometimes months, sometimes even years to get it back. And you just go ahead and do it knowing that you're covered legally because you sent in the request.
Right, yeah.
So
it's
ridiculous.
Because this has always been a big thing with streamers.
Yeah, you know, so this is why people want to steal music. So. I'm like, well, what do you expect?
Well, here's what I think. I think, and this is just my opinion, you know, we've been involved with music streaming, I can say at least 17 years, closing on 20, and you're definitely over 20 years, right? I mean, just going back.
Yeah.
You know, in one way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
I think if you're not making money, if it's not a money-making, a commercial endeavor, I think there should be just, you know, some sort of special dispensation. That's what I think.
Yeah, a limit even.
Okay.
Something.
Okay.
You know, some kind
of.
Right. You know, I'm all for the artist receiving their due.
Yeah, so am I.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like,
so
come on. How do these things get, I don't know, how do you encourage people to be artistic?
Yeah. Well, you know, the internet changed everything. I know people who don't think that, you know, blogging and citizen journalism on the internet is actually journalism. I know people don't think that internet radio is actually internet radio. I should say radio. I mean, there's all, you know, all sorts of.
Well, I call everyone artists pretty much, and
I like the term
content
creators. I like that.
That's good.
Yeah. And there actually, I watch a lot of stuff on YouTube that is content creators talking about content creators talking about a cottage industry. Right? Isn't that like
true.
It's true.
So
much of the wow, it's warm. These cans, you see the cans with these velour, right? These are the DT70s, right? I had her put them on, and first of all, they isolate totally. And second of all, they have their own EQ curve. They have the famous, the infamous barodynamic EQ curve, which is sweet. You know, it's a little high, a little bass, and a little high, you know, and then it drops. So they're not honest. She's wearing a pair of honest headphones. She's wearing whatever the Sony...
Professional.
Yeah, the Sony Professionals. I forget what the number is on those. MDCs, whatever. The ones everybody uses.
Yeah.
Those are honest. Those are flat. Those are honest. These are not honest, but they lie really nice. And I like them. And we bought them more for recreational use, not for work. I consider this to be work. Because I couldn't really, it wouldn't be right for me to EQ the rest of the board and what I'm hearing from these. Because you're not experiencing this the way that I am. I have to get something out of it. You're not experiencing it the way I am.
Even if it's just a sound.
Even if it's just a little bit of sound. So yeah. So she's like, I put them on. She's like, oh, wow.
I want that.
That's different. I'm like, yeah. Ooh. But the Sonys are honest. But they're velour. I got the blackout version of the 770s. I paid an extra $50 because I'm a schmuck. I'm the classic definition of a schmuck. I want them all black. And the velour, which are, you know, the things inside, are totally black. And they're great.
Dark.
They're totally groovy.
There's a dark mode again.
Yeah, see, there's that dark mode again. I think they call them the blackout edition. I'm pretty sure they do.
You're in dark mode.
Well, it's a whole light thing. I'm light sensitive. I'm like photosensitive. Actually, I'm not. I do all right in the sun once over Manhattan.
We are now.
Yeah, remember when we came back from Texas? I had a tan like lasted 3 years.
Yes.
Took 3 winters for my tan to disappear.
We're gonna be when we move to Texas. We're gonna be out sitting out there at that picnic table in the yard, right?
Yeah.
Where the umbrella is.
Yeah,
and
where the umbrella
sunglasses
is.
And
yeah. Yeah, like
black,
like the vampire from Preacher.
Yes, yeah. exactly.
Yeah, if you ever seen the Fox show Preacher, that was based on the comic book too, I believe, as the Umbrella Academy is. You know, speaking of, I see stuff. You know, I watch a lot of documentaries, and I watched, and you didn't see this for me. I watched this last night, a documentary on thrash, which was really, as you know, as far as a music genre goes, really super cool. I really enjoyed it. I forget how much, you know, going back and listening to that, like, especially like early Metallica, was very much enjoyable. Like those first three albums, you could arguably, and they went on to become, you know, Metallica's like,
well, yeah.
But those first three albums while Cliff was still alive are, you know, I don't know. I think they should be separated. I think they should be put in some sort of otherly category, not for nothing.
Otherly.
So the Master of Puppets people will argue about. I remember that argument happening at the time. But so that was really cool. I think that was on Prime. I think on Amazon Prime it should be up there. The History of Thrash or something or another. It's nice, a nice documentary. Relatively, comprehensive for those who are interested in the subject matter. What else did I watch this week? I watched, I wound up, because this was another week of, it wasn't a week of nothing, but it was a week of almost nothing. It was a lot of little somethings that really didn't add up to anything, but it was at least some sort of a level of effort on my part. The camera has been, is in the process of being procured, the new camera, the 90D. And I'm looking forward to that. And when this is real, this is how I am. It's like if I got to go to criminal court, I want a Jewish lawyer. If I gotta, if I ever get to the point where I actually need an accountant, which would actually be funny, I want a Jew. You know what I'm saying? I want a Jewish accountant.
Yeah.
So when it came down to actually procuring a reasonably high end, at least for me, a reasonably high end camera, I said, that's it. I'm going to B&H. So it's on back order at B&H with a couple of other items. But it should be. So that was a big thing this week. It was like, even though we knew it was on back order, we wanted to order it from them so that we would be in queue for when it came in. So I'm just waiting for it to come in. And UPS is breaking my balls.
They suck.
UPS, at this point in time, UPS, they're on the bad Jew list. I don't even know if they're Jews, but we'll just presume that they are. Bad Jew list. Like three times this week, they claim to have tried to have delivered a couple of packages. I ordered some lenses for the camera because I only procured the camera body from B&H. So then they say they're going to take it to the local place where I can pick it up. But then they say it's out for delivery. And it's this whole, it's a chazerai.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. So, I know you had. Come on. that being said, you're going to have to call them on Monday.
Monday.
Give them a yell. And like I said, I don't even care if they deliver it here. Let them leave it there. Let it leave it at the pickup pot, and I'll go to pick up and pick it up.
Tell them that I'm making a little representation of their stupid little brown trucks.
Yeah.
I'm going to set it on fire.
You had a problem with your foodie thing, right?
Yeah, I did.
When you were ordering your food stuff?
Yeah, it's like, come on, dude. After the smoke clears when you open the door of your van, you have to actually knock on the damn door.
We got this giant Feed Me Seymour thing going up our porch that I really should kill. It's a plant.
It's not a vine.
Oh, it's horrible. If you work professionally and you got to go into a lot of places, they're worried about ticks and stuff like that. I mean, I get it. I'm not, like the mailman. That's why I give him $20, tip. I don't know how much he gets in the ghetto, but I know where I come from, if your mailman does a good job, you tip him. Even though, he makes money, he's on overtime, blah, blah, blah. No, you show your appreciation and he'll go the extra distance. So our mailman, if he had to climb Everest to deliver a package, he would do it.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he's a good guy. The UPS, ever since, and UPS used to be great. We never had any problems with UPS. And then the COVID happened, and I don't see him. Do you see the drivers?
No.
I don't even know who it is.
It used to be the same person just about all the time.
Right.
But now I don't think it is, even though I can't see him. I'm pretty sure it's not because the other guy wasn't afraid to knock on the door.
Well, then, not for nothing. Are they going to bring packages up to the house from where their mailbox is in Texas?
Yeah, I asked them. That was like the second thing I asked.
Yeah, because you get Amazon. Does the Amazon come here?
That was the second thing I asked after I asked them about broadband.
What'd they say?
Then it was like, oh, yeah, we get Amazon deliveries here.
To the house?
Time. Yeah.
All right.
I said you don't have to go to town to get everything.
Oh, awesome.
And they said, no, we don't, right?
Yeah, we're really Amazon inclined. I think the moral of the story. Because it was an Amazon order. I ordered two lenses from Amazon. Actually, three. One's due on Wednesday. From Amazon. And I didn't use Amazon as a fulfiller. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So I used another merchant. So they're the ones who shipped at UPS. I think the key going forward is to order from anything. Don't order anything that's not fulfilled by Amazon.
That's
meaning from one
sure.
of their centers or whatever. I'm literally sweating so much, my eyes hurt from the salt water.
Oh, my God.
Look at me.
It's not even, okay. It's those headphones.
Yeah, it's the Velour. And I'm drinking hot coffee. I'm going to take them off.
Yeah.
All right. I don't know if you're going to hear this or not. I'm just going to put them there for a moment.
That wasn't bad.
Oh, my God. See, I can't hear myself. I'm going to look terrible. At my levels. I'm flying by instrumentation here. I'm flying by instrumentation. And if anything happens, you tell me, right? Because you're not entirely tone deaf.
No, I'll tell you. All right. I'm not tone deaf.
I never said you were. entirely tone deaf.
No.
What? 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 So yeah, UPS is on my shit list at the moment. But we did together. We watched, and this was a recommendation from Pinball Wizard, who actually acquired a new pinball machine. I believe he's up to 15. As a collector, he has 15 pinball machines, which is actually rather cool. So he messaged me last night, and he started telling me about the Uncle Tom movie, which I think was a theatrical release not that long ago. I managed to procure it off the internet in you know, the same places that I get all those Linux distros from. And that's such an inside joke. I don't know if anybody gets it anymore.
If you didn't know, you're not going to know. You'll never be cool enough to know. So go away.
So yeah, I found it in its entirety, and we watched it last night, and it had the subject matter was specifically about black Republicans and conservatives, and the because those aren't always necessarily the same thing, and you know, a lot of the slings and arrows that they bear from their brethren, and also from you know, white liberals in regards to, like, well, how can you be a Republican? And it's interesting, you know, and again, I thank Pinball Wizard for the recommendation. It reminded me very much of a movie called Runaway Slave,
yeah,
which I think we had seen a couple years prior,
yeah,
which basically dealt with the same subject matter. You know, again, I'm always one to get down with the racial epithets because it's real easy for me to use the N-word to describe the slime of the world, and it still is, and it probably always will be, unfortunately. But it's nice to see black middle-class people actually caring enough about their country to reevaluate their political viewpoints and to understand to what degree that liberals, a.k.a. the Democratic Party,
yeah,
or at least the left wing of the Democratic Party, does all it can to take their votes for granted. And gives them just enough to subsist. That's the door.
Right, right.
Just enough to subsist, but never really
dependent.
Make them dependent, and keep them on the plantation. You know, we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
And it's nice to see recognition on the part of a lot of working class or even merchant business class. Herman Cain was in it, which was really kind of you know, yeah, it was sad. You know. I couldn't remember what pizza chain that he had originally, you know, been the CEO of, and then he wound up getting involved with other franchises, but it was Godfather's Pizza,
yeah,
from what you told me, right?
Right.
It was awesome. It was in a pairing. Candace Owens was featured extensively, and I'm a big Candace Owens fan.
Oh, I love her now.
See, I told you, right? Yeah.
Oh, my God.
If you get that, she's testified before Congress in just the same manner, in exactly the same attitude, manner, and subject matter. As she did last night.
I'm going to have a girl crush on her for ever.
She's really cool.
Yeah.
And who else was in there? Roger Eldridge, mm-hmm, right, was in there. And they did some Thomas Sowell. You have to, if you don't know who Thomas Sowell, it's S-O-W-E-L-L.
Right.
Sowell. Check him out, not for nothing. And this is if you're, again, you're conservatives, you know, and you're interested in conservative thought, and you're interested in the I'll put it, you know, the plight of black America. And when I say the plight of black America, I mean those who can be saved. Just really, you know, you can't put lipstick on a pig. It's just not, say it all the time. I think for whatever reason, the dumbing down of black America, to the point of them being ghetto slime, you know, a lot of people just give it up. They're just frustrated, and they forget that there are a lot of other black Americans who are really putting in an effort to really be Americans and have something to contribute to our society.
This is the lesson I think I wish that everyone would learn, and that I got so interesting in the documentary last night. Was the people who ask the questions, you know, why aren't we being told about our history? Why aren't we being told about the heroes of our history? Not just the people who get killed in violent acts put upon them by others. Why aren't we told about the people who excel? Why aren't we told about the people who are entrepreneurs and heroes in very different ways, and who are educators and who are successful politicians? I mean, and why doesn't anybody tell us the truth about the Klan and the Democrats beginning and all of the ways that
Margaret Sanger.
And
Planned Parenthood. Why hasn't anybody tell them about that?
And Lyndon Johnson. Come on.
Right. And the Great Society. Again, I berate all the time. You know, fuck you, Mr. Johnson.
Yeah.
You know, who made it profitable for them not to be to break up the Afro-American household and to take the husband, the man, out of the household. Was never like that in the 30s and the 40s and even into the 50s.
Right.
This is all documentable. All documentable.
That's
not for nothing. So not for nothing, not that different from Black Lives Matter. They're interested in breaking down the nuclear family as well, too. Not for nothing.
Yeah.
So isn't it, you know, again, interesting where you see just the reiteration of far left politics wishing to destroy the backbone of America. Move us farther away from God and break up the family.
Same agenda, different name.
Basically. So it's utterly fascinating.
You're not going to have peace, justice, or anything of that nature if you're not creating peace and justice. If you're creating violence and negativity and injustice for each other and for everyone else, then you're going to have more of it. You can't create anything good from anger and a story.
Yeah.
Except righteous indignation, and there's a big difference.
Yeah, and there's a lot of that, not for nothing, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was pretty cool. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was shot in black and white. You know, I've noticed things as far as, you know, cinematography lately. And I've always been, you know, a film person. So I kind of always, I think I enjoyed that better in black and white than I would have in color. You know, I'm not quite sure if it was any sort of statement or not.
I think it was.
But I think it blended better because I think there was footage there that was older.
I think it was the metaphor.
Okay. Possibly. But yeah, no, very enjoyable. So again, Uncle Tom was the name of the movie.
Yeah.
I don't know, ran about an hour 46 maybe, hour and a half. Yeah, good stuff.
And it was on Amazon? We saw it on
Amazon? No, I downloaded that from the internet in an undisclosable location. Yeah, I don't care to mention.
Memory's gone. Okay.
So it is available on the internet. I know you rather industrious? Is that a proper word? Did I just make a word?
Figure it out.
Industrious.
That's a word.
Yeah, all right. People are capable of finding it, you know. It's in the news groups. Shh, the news groups. I love the news groups. I would even keep the news groups even if I didn't have internet. That's how much I love the fucking news groups. That's actually hilarious if you think about it. Although I think there are readers for on the phone. I think you could get stuff for Android.
So, sure there is.
Yeah.
I heard somewhere.
Yeah. I think there are. I'm trying to think if there's anything... you know, too exciting. I know we wanted to talk a bit about the George Floyd stuff. And when I say stuff, I mean the release of the body cam footage. Well, it wasn't, I guess it was a leak. That's the best way of putting it, the body cam footage. And the level of resistance and the apparent hysteria that Floyd was exhibiting during the, before he wound up outside the car with the knee on his neck.
Yeah.
I think there's a strong possibility, and I've been saying this all the way along, I think there's a strong possibility that the cops may beat the case. I think there's a very strong possibility, and I'm worried about what level of chimp out we're going to get on...
I know what you mean, yeah.
As a result of that.
Yeah.
That's going to... Because think about what happened in the prelude. It's kind of scary. But you saw the footage. I mean... Do you understand why he wound up on the concrete and being detained by the officers the way he was?
I actually feel that I do. And it's, of course, not the popular opinion. But what I saw from the get-go, from the very approach they first made, Mr. Floyd, you know, or Mr. whoever you are, stop the car and please put your hands on the wheel. From the get-go, there is resistance. And not just, oh, I don't want to talk to you right now. Or, oh, man, I'm going to get a ticket. You know, but it was like really super freak out existence time. And it did not stop. It didn't stop. They had to control him somehow. He was a big guy. And I'm not saying...
That dude was big.
Don't say that I'm saying, well, killing him is not a way to control him. That's not at all what I'm saying. What I'm saying is he's a very big guy.
There was provocation there without a doubt.
There was provocation.
And a guy that big at that level of hysteria, you don't know what he's going to do from moment to moment.
Now, I don't know how many of you have ever had to deal with somebody that's that big and that loaded, that high, you know, and that drunk at the same time. But good freaking luck you know, getting them to even sit still for 2 seconds.
My ex-wife raised her hand.
Yeah. Oh, man. I'm not okay. I'm not going there at all. Yeah. And that, but give that a try, you know, sometime. It can't happen. They couldn't keep him subdued enough to even explain to him what was going on.
Right.
As much as he was hollering that that's, you know, he was sorry and he wanted him to.
You have to give him up.
They never could even get that much of a chance to tell him, you know, we're doing this because, you know, I never once heard them mention because of the fake bills.
Yeah.
They didn't give him a chance to even say that.
What happened, I think most people know by now, is what happened is that he went into a corner store and bought cigarettes with what appeared to be a fake $20 bill. Now, while he was in there, he apparently we never see where there's no video of what happened in the store.
But
the proprietors of the store were apparently under the impression that he was intoxicated, as he was having a difficult time handling himself.
Right.
So whether it be stumbling or whatever his speech pattern was, they felt that it was alcohol because I guess you know, it was a Middle Eastern place, so who knows if they, you know, are familiar with methamphetamine and on what level. So they were indicating intoxication of some sort. So they called the cops after they couldn't get the cigarettes back. They went out in the car, tried to get the cigarettes back, and the cops showed up. And the cops were expecting an intoxicated individual who's difficult enough to deal with. Now, not for nothing, just an report of an intoxicated individual getting behind the wheel of a car is enough provocation to call a police officer.
Well, that's right. And then if you get there and they're not as crazy acting, quote unquote, as the victims, the people involved claim they were, and they're calm and they're basically just kind of sloppy drunk, that's another matter.
Right.
This is not at all what he was.
No, this was a little bit more freaked out. He was really sped up.
Yeah, he was sped up. He was aggressive.
Yeah. Well, he was aggressive in a non-violent way.
Well, I think that there was this impending.
I think what it was is that there was this impending feeling that there could be violence at any moment, but he was never violent. He resisted in a bodily way, in the sense of he would not walk. Do you know what I mean? He stopped. He prevented them from moving him.
But it wasn't like
hitting them violence.
Right. It wasn't hitting them violence, but you have to take into consideration also, when you're in the position that the officers were in, the potential for that violence. You have to judge a situation and see, is it about to lead
absolutely
to something worse?
Absolutely.
Where
no,
could
no,
this
I,
go?
100%. I agree 100%. But I just wanted to make it clear that he wasn't being violent in the traditional violent sense of the word. But he was very strong, and he was resisting them moving him out of the car, across the street, into the police car. He claimed claustrophobia, but yet they pulled him out of his own car, and he resisted when they tried to pull him out of his own car.
Right.
So apparently his own car is not a small space, which of course it is. So yeah. I don't even know what to make of that.
Yeah.
The video's out there. You could just put in George Floyd body cam stuff, and you'll see it come up. There's various edits of it. I think the longest edit that I've seen is like maybe close to 9 minutes. And it probably ends with him being just about being pulled out the other side of the car by the officer who wound up putting the knee on the neck there.
Because of the level of resistance. He had fallen over, and his head was like out of the back seat of the car, the police car. And he was trying to sit him up and trying to right him. And somebody that's resisting that much and that freaked out about things, you can't do it. So think about the angles that you have to get a person to move.
And especially if they're dropping their weight, if they're just resisting in the sense of that they're just letting their body weight fall.
Right.
You know, it's very similar to the term dead weight.
Yeah.
Where it now becomes you're not moving them and they're helping you.
Yeah.
They're a sack of potatoes.
Right. It was evident to me, if I had to make a final judgment on the whole thing, that Mr. Floyd very sadly died because of poor choices he himself made before he even got there that led him to that point.
That's the drugs,
the alcohol, the lifestyle.
Right.
He led. Everything you do takes you to a certain point.
Oh, absolutely.
In life. And you can't shirk responsibility for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. So, I guess I gotta move this up. I guess that's what I gotta do. All right. I'll do that.
All right.
Help me out.
Oh, I thought I was yelling.
I don't have cans on. I'm only watching them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, not for nothing.
So he made the choices that he made that led him to where he was that day. And I'm not saying he should have died yet again. I'm saying that's the reason that
totally
he
avoidable.
Shouldn't have.
It was totally avoidable. And not only, right. not only just the life decisions that got him there. And while that's true in a larger sense, you could say that of a lot of people and
yeah.
a lot of things.
Yeah.
I think it's, I think it's, I also had a little peanut butter sandwich for a snack, which I normally don't. Not that people care, but.
There's always a point at which you can turn around.
The drugs. And I mean, they found methamphetamine in the system. I believe they found a couple other drugs in the system. He died of cardiac arrest. He didn't die from being asphyxiated.
Right.
And that's a big thing. Now, you could argue, they're going to argue that they caused the cardiac arrest. But I think it might be successfully argued that the drugs that the man took had made him extra sensitive to the idea of a cardiac arrest.
The stress level that he went to from the moment he was communicated to by the officer that pulled him over was not, it was something that built. It was something that shot up. This amp went to 12 immediately.
Well, I just, you know, it's interesting to me how, you know, this particular person wound up being the saint, you know, the martyr for all the destruction that's occurred, you know. And if you ask me, all that destruction and all that hatred was just waiting under the surface. It's been bubbling for the last 3 years. It's the larger aspect of Orange Man Bad. You know, it's the most physical manifestation of Orange Man Bad.
Yes.
I mean, I don't think there's really another way to put it because when you get a better look at this video and you understand again that this man put himself in the situation that he wound up in, I'd be perfectly honest, it's just another nigger who couldn't follow directions. Not good. You know, I mean, I don't know really how else to put it. I mean, I'd be very, very blunt about it, as I am prone to be. That being said, you know, did he deserve to have this guy's knee on his neck for 8 minutes? Maybe 4 minutes would have done the job. I think he deserved to have a knee on his neck for as long as it would have taken him to be subdued and to stop resisting.
Well, I think they should have.
Was that point passed? That's the whole point.
Mm.
Was that point passed? And by how much was it passed?
Right.
You know, because again, I believe the Minneapolis Police Department allows that particular, I don't know if you call it a maneuver, but the knee on the neck, but only if the person is resisting. He started out resisting. The knee was on his neck while he was resisting. He stopped resisting. But if the officer had a feeling that he was going to start again, and one more time, this was a big guy. George Floyd was the biggest person on the scene as far as size go. Yeah. You know, you look at these cops and they look kind of big, but you know what it is? They got the vests on. So they're all puffed up underneath their uniforms.
Right.
They're not big. You know, they're chasing donuts. You know what I'm saying? George Floyd, you know, looked like a healthy specimen, capable of doing damage. And then factor in the fact that he was under the influence.
Right.
It could have exploded at any point in time.
Right.
That's what I think was going through the officer's mind. Was it justified? Maybe. I got to be honest, maybe.
That potential for violence or for a situation to go horribly wrong, which it did and to some degree, but not for the reasons that he anticipated. I think they could have called the ambulance sooner than they did, the EMT sooner than
Agreed.
They did.
Agreed. They probably could have given better directions to, well, they called the ambulance, and the ambulance called for an EMT. The ambulance called for the fire department.
Mm-hmm.
Because they felt they were in over their heads, and the fire department showed up with a wagon on the scene, and the ambulance had already left. So there was some confusion about where the fire department truck should find the ambulance, and they eventually did, but it took 5 minutes for them to get there.
Right.
He was already in cardiac arrest.
Why couldn't they save him from cardiac arrest? Because they're not qualified.
Well, yeah, one, the EM, you know, the actual, I don't know what the difference is between the ambulance EMTs and the fire department EMTs in Minneapolis. It's, everything's different everywhere.
Right.
Like here, fire and EMT are the exact same thing. All firemen are trained to be EMTs after a certain, if they were in after a certain point in time, just automatic. So it's different in there. So in Minneapolis, I do not criticize the officers for not trying to render assistance because that's not their job. And from the standpoint of that, they're pretty much trained for the most part not to do that because of liability to the city.
Right.
If they do something wrong or there's a direct death as a result of the assistance that they tried to render, people will sue the city. It happens all the time.
Right.
So I don't criticize them so much for that. We'll just have to see how it plays out, but I wouldn't be surprised if it winds up being another Eric Gardner. Would not surprise me in the least. And again, I think there's violence in all this, you know, because again, I don't understand looting in George Floyd's name. I don't understand how the looting and the destruction and yes, the deaths that have occurred as a result.
Right.
But I don't even know what the number is now. But I know there are a couple of black folks that got killed, including one retired police officer, if I recall, a retired police captain, if I recall correctly, in some of these riots. And there's just been, you know, I think the lack of decisive action and possibly even indications of condoning behavior on the part of the Democratic mayors and governors have caused this violence to go on. It's been encouraged. It's like, do what you want and nothing's going to happen to you. Mm-hmm. There would be no repercussions. Everything's on, even New York City is on a murder uptick. And that's, New York City's been pretty, as far as homicides go, New York City's been pretty mellow the last X number of years. It hasn't been on the top of the list. It's back up there. I think they're like they're up like a 100-something%, couple 100% even, based upon where they were this time last year, or even earlier in the year. So, you know, I think you have a perfect storm of the COVID keeping people locked up and antsy, and then they hit the street, and they got a chance to do Orange Man bad. You know, I still haven't figured out how going to a, and Dr. Fauci wasn't able to enlighten us on this matter either, by the way, in his testimony before Congress. I don't understand how 10,000 people going to a demonstration without any mask and crowding together on the streets to burn stuff down is not a problem, but going to church is. You know, being able for people to go to church and sit in their church together as a congregation and pray as a congregation somehow is a public health risk. I don't see how one is and the other isn't, other than the fact that you obviously have interest in, again, destroying the American values.
That's right.
That's
right.
What this is all about. It's all about destroying American values. And again, it's plain and simple. It's Marxism, because at the end of the day, there's no way that that Afro-Americans, I have to think of the terms, I got to control myself, that Afro-Americans, you know, that the lower stratus of Afro-Americans in this country are ever going to be able to help themselves. So the only way they're going to be helped is, and the only way the playing field is going to be leveled, and the only way we're all going to be equal is that those who work and capable of providing have to hand over their share to them. Because they are do it as reparations.
Well, like the documentary we watched last night showed us, the Uncle Tom, or they're not being told that they have any other option. Blackheads aren't being shown their potential.
Right.
They're not being shown they're smart.
No.
They're not being shown they have the ability to be creative and create art, and they could do whatever they want. They could be president. You know, they're told that, oh, yeah,
apparently
we gotta
they
have
can
a black
be president.
President.
Yes. Apparently
yeah,
they
we
can
could,
be.
We could have one, but it's probably not going to be you.
Well, he wasn't very helpful. Not for nothing. The first, you know, and it's a mulatto, but, you know, again, and I think we've had mulatto presidents before, not counting Bill Clinton. I think we have. I think there's been one or two in there in back in the olden days, as they put it.
Yeah.
You don't want to shake those trees too hard, if you know what I'm saying. So we had what was the equivalent of an Afro-American president. We had, my son could, you know, Trayvon could be my son. We had that guy. And all he did was create a wider racial strife and, you know, and divide.
Yeah.
That's all he did. He just really fanned the flames, not for nothing.
Well, that's all Jesse Jackson is doing, and that's all Reverend Sharpton.
Okay, those are race pimps. Those are like B player race pimps. Those are like B, you know, you have B actors. Those are B race pimps. They're not even, you know, you get big Rays pimps. You're talking, you know, Elijah Cummings, who is now dead. You're talking John Lewis, who is now dead.
Yeah.
You know? What's Jesse Jackson's claim to fame? He's got Martin Luther King's blood on his shirt?
Right.
Seriously. Right?
Right. Oh, good for you.
Right. Jesse Jackson is nothing but a race pimp. And Al Sharpton, you know, people who are from New York, I know, I got some former expat New Yorkers and some people directly in New York who listen to this show. You all know the deal with Al Sharpton. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's a travesty of journalism, journalistic, what would be the word, of journalistic standards that this man would be allowed to host a television show and spew his hatred. About that hatred. You know, like we were saying, you know, at least with Elijah Muhammad, at least you get the truth with Farrakhan. You know, Elijah Muhammad and Farrakhan, because that's
yes, you know, right,
with
gotcha.
The Muslim Brotherhood.
Yeah.
At least Farrakhan's honest in his hatred. You know, he's forthright and he's honest. Seriously. You know, what about that church that I can't think of the dude's name, also spewing hate in Chicago.
Yes.
That
I know what you call
went to.
That Obama went to?
Yeah, that they went right. to before he became president, and then he right. had a distance because the optics weren't good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I forget that dude's name. Hatred.
Yeah. Yeah.
Blame the white man. Blame the white man. Blame the white man.
Yeah.
You know, how about take responsibility? And this is it. Just no one ever got anywhere in America without taking responsibility for themselves.
Right.
Plain and simple. You take responsibility for yourself. You take account of what's going on. You go out, you put your nose against the stone, and you do it. And you knock. If you got to knock on a million doors in order to get that one opportunity, then you keep knocking. You don't sit there and complain that someone else didn't have to knock a million times. Because you should be going into the game with the idea of you have something to prove. Not anybody else, but you.
That's right. And you'd be surprised how many people have to.
Yeah.
You know, more people than not have to knock on a million doors before they get that one.
I always love how they talk about people being an overnight success. There's no such thing as an overnight success.
No.
No, not at all. Zero. So.
No, not at all. I talk to people every day in my practice that say, I've been looking for a job for 2 years or for months, you know, over a year, 2 years, you know, and they're not stupid people. They're educated people. They're all different races. They're all different circumstances, situations, well, married, have children.
In a lot of ways, single. we never recovered from the 08 recession.
Yeah.
Where you had people with, you know, master's degrees working at McDonald's.
Right.
Because these were the jobs that were available, you know, and now with the COVID going on and off and opening and closing and this and that, the other thing, I mean, things are, you know, very, you know, there's definitely not a lot to build on is what it comes down to. College education isn't worth what it used to be worth.
No, not.
Unfortunately. You know, just I guess we got a couple minutes left. I'd like to give the president credit for going ahead and helping America out when America needs help, and not letting the Democrats in Congress hold the rest of the country hostage.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice that he, by executive order, he extended the unemployment benefits. He extended the, what else did he,
moratoriums on evictions.
Right, moratoriums on evictions.
The employer's payroll tax.
Right, he no payroll tax, and I don't know if it was to the rest of the year or what the deal may be. Now, people are a little concerned about the payroll tax because that's where Social Security, you know, that's where the funding of Social Security comes from to a degree.
Mm-hmm.
But even if he forgives it, and somehow that missing money doesn't wind up going into Social Security. Social Security, they have to find a more viable way of funding Social Security. If this expedites that, then maybe it's a good thing. Because they keep kicking the can down the road and kicking the can down the road. And, you know, there's so many IOUs from Congress that took money out against that annuity that it's ridiculous. So they have to find a viable way to fund Social Security. Now, I'm not talking about getting rid of it because there's just too many people paid into it, you know. But they have to find some sort of viable way. And I'm sure if we reelect President Trump, I'm sure President Trump, if he has to deal with the Social Security issue, if it's put in front of him because of everybody else's inaction, I wouldn't be surprised if the man comes up with a decent plan, quite frankly, that might actually save Social Security.
I would
say so. It wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah.
Winning. It wouldn't surprise me. So I guess we'll have to see how that plays out in the long run. I think so. It was maybe one other thing. I can't think of what it was. But very, very, very pleased to see that. Very, very pleased to see that. So I'm sure there were a couple of Democrats today pooping their pants, you know, because and again, you know, there was talk of, oh, maybe the Democrats are going to sue so to prevent it from happening. So what are the optics on, speaking of optics, what are the optics on that? How's that going to look? Yeah, you know, they go on about, oh, we want to help America and he doesn't want to help America. We're the ones that want to help America. Right. Yeah, that's why you held America hostage, you fucktards.
That's right.
You know, and again, you know what the scary part is?
Mm-hmm.
You know, Pelosi and Schumer, they're not even the radical left wing. They're not even the radical.
No.
They're like somewhere off to the, they're like off to the left, but there's radical left involved with the Democratic Party now. We got AOC and the two brown bitches. I can't think of their name. So, man, yeah. I mean, it's crazy. The Democratic Party has been hijacked. It needs to center itself, and it needs to do a fair amount of evicting, you know, via voting to get these people out, because it's frightening. It's literally frightening. And they're both a case of term limits gone awry as well, not for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Not for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's easy for millionaires to be making decisions. You know, mm-hmm. And how is it? This is the thing. You know, I'm gonna, closing thought. You know, it used to be that people did the politicians in their were spare time. They were farmers. They were workers. And they were elected to office. And they carried out their office. And they still managed to work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when politics became a political, you know, a class, a working, an actual profession,
mm-hmm.
things started to go down the drain, right?
Yes.
You know, but you ask yourself, how is it that all of these politicians somehow wind up being millionaires by the time they are maybe eventually voted out of office? How is that possible? Do we not see something wrong with the system itself? They're a symptom of something deeper. You know, is it lobbying? It could be lobbyists. It could be the power structure of how it's set up. It could be the swamp. We talk about the swamp all the time, or mm-hmm. we reference it.
Mm-hmm.
The president promised to drain the swamp.
Mm-hmm.
He's done it to some degree and met some resistance, obviously. It boggles my mind. It boggles my mind how you go in worth $100,000 maybe, because you have to be wealthy to run for the most part.
Yeah.
It used to be you had to be a white landowner. Now it's, you know, they've extended it a little bit, but still you need a fair amount of money to be able to become a politician even to begin with.
Right.
But they go in $100,000 maybe, worth $100,000, and they come out worth millions. Millions of dollars. How is that happening? Why is it happening? Why is it allowed to happen?
This is why conspiracy theories develop.
No, it, you know, they always say follow the money. And it's like, you know, that's one of your more interesting follow the money questions. How the fuck do politicians wind up accumulating millions and millions and millions of dollars while in office and continue to do so when they leave?
Yeah, how is that ethical at all?
How is it, you know, again, how is it ethical?
I don't know.
How is it ethical? I guess that's a great question. You know what? Because just because it's not illegal doesn't mean it's not ethical.
That's right. Legal, right.
Just because it's not illegal doesn't mean it's ethical.
Right.
Right. That's the phrase on that.
Yeah.
So yeah, and you know, just give that some thought. Give that some thought. Anyway, I'm gonna get out of here. I'm still sweating.
Well, thank you for allowing me to experience the Elif Minwood Files in person.
Yeah, yeah. No, well, you know, every now and then, you know, have you come by? Yeah, it's not like you're doing anything else in this time slot anyway. Not anything productive. I don't want to mention any whatever.
All right.
You know, that being said, blah, blah, blah. Let me do my plugs. I'm going to do the plugs. Forget to do the plugs sometime. All right, head over to elifmidwood.com. You got my archives up there. You got links to John Lightning, 11lrni.com. Takes you over to John Lightning site, where there's John Lightning archives and Dave the Boogeyman archives and Big Steve Cole in Memoriam archives. And I think my archives are there as well. All the way over to the right, it's our good friend Brad Reed over there at Grits Radio. We thank Brad for you know, playing the show on his personal stream. We like it. We appreciate it. It's nice to get out there. I got my social media, Take the Red Pill. Head over to my Facebook, Twitter, what's the other thing there? Instagram, and I think Pinterest. And what else is there? There's stuff there. There's other stuff there. Email address, Silverfish. Email address is... LFMidwood at LFMidwood.com, and the The phone number is 484-1313. It's 484-1313. That's a 401 area code. And I'm going to get out of here. So thanks all, and I'll be back next week.
You've been listening to the Midwood Files on Radio New York International. Thanks for listening.